Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real life store stage. All the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage. Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Welcome back to the original Scottish Rugby Podcast. I'm going to start with a pretty simple question. How would you like a free case of craft beer? Obviously, the answer to that is yes. And as a listener to our show, for being loyal and coming back to listening to Alan's quizzes every week, through our friends at beer52.com, you can get a free case of craft beer from all over the world. Beer 52 is the world's most popular monthly craft beer discovery club. Last month's beers were from the USA, the Boston Beer Party. This month's are from Korea. So get yourself onto beer52.com/thistle to claim a free case. As a listener to our show, all you have to do is pay £5.95 in postage. So that's 8 incredible craft beers from all over the world, a copy of their Ferment magazine, which, if it floats your boat, you can read all about how the beers are made, and a delicious snack. Matt was chowing down on some curried chickpeas earlier today. So imagine that, a Korean beer and some curried chickpeas. How good. So that's beer52.com/thistle. Get yourself some great beers for the second half of the Six Nations. Now, onto the pod. Hello and welcome back to the Thistle Scottish Rugby Podcast. After a week off, we are back and better than ever, just like our very own Duncan Weir. To my left, as ever, my trusty steeds, Matt and Alan. How are you, boys?
Good, mate. Yeah, nice to be back after a little hiatus.
Yeah, you've been away, haven't you? Where were you?
Yeah, I was away at one of my famous anime conferences, as I always found out the week after.
Was it a classic, was it?
It was good. Yeah, it's just everything you come to expect from them. It's good to see you, some of the old gang.
It's amazing that your fiancé lets you use all your holiday time to go to anime conferences. It's really weird.
Yeah, I know.
Good old Heather. Well, thank you very much for coming back and not deserting us after a week off. Have I not asked you how you were?
No.
How are you, Alan?
I'm cranky, right?
Okay, well, we can look forward to some of that, particularly as we look through Scotland's injury list. That sounds like good fun. Thanks very much for coming back to us after a week, as I was saying. You've always been chatting to us on Twitter at Thistle Rugby Pod, on Instagram, Thistle_Rugby_Pod. And the emails have been a little bit slow, actually. So if you guys want to pick that up, we will get them read out. That is thistlerugby@gmail.com. If you are listening to us on iTunes, you can leave us a review and a rating. It helps us get up there and get more people listening to one of the many Scottish Rugby podcasts that are out there now. How about this one from sports fan, brackets, fan of sports. I love rugby. This podcast is sensational. Wow. So much enthusiasm for the pod there. I'm loving it.
To be fair, he loves rugby and we talk about rugby. So We're right in his sweet spot.
Exactly. He or she.
He or
we
she.
We absolutely do not discriminate around here.
Sorry, that was misogynist.
Yes, it was, you terrible bastard. let's have a quick look at the agenda. Some pro-team news. Lots of new signings at Edinburgh and Glasgow. We'll have a look at the Scottish Cup quarter finals from the weekend and some stuff, some new information that has come up around the Super Six. And then, of course, the big talking point of the week, Scotland versus France down in Paris this weekend. We're going to be previewing that. And we've been joined by sports journalist Paul Edison, who knows everything there is to know about what is going on in French rugby. So we've had a good chat with him. So he gives you a hell of a lot more insight into the French team than we ever could. Alan, you've got a quiz. What are the details?
Most caps.
Wow. Very good. Preview that.
Leave with a broad
sounds good theme. Yeah, I'm keen for that.
And for the absolute rugby ultras, there are Edinburgh and Glasgow Pro 14 games this weekend as well, so we're gonna have a very quick look at those towards the end of the pod. But let's start right at the top. Edinburgh, new deals for some young lads who've not really been playing too much, but they've earned and done enough to get another year in the capital. George Taylor, Jason Baggett and Jack Stanley all signed new one-year deals at Edinburgh. Much to say about that, lads?
I think George Taylor's been pretty impressive, the few opportunities he's got. Looks like quite a good prospect. Baggett, we haven't seen much of, but he's still quite young and seems to always do well for Merrows. I don't think Jack Stanley's had any appearances, but he's been travelling with the squad, definitely for the Kings match at least, and by all accounts playing pretty well for Sonians, so see how he goes in the future.
I'm pro more tight head props.
Well, that's the thing, yeah. I think he was at the Exeter Academy before.
Yeah, he was.
I did read that.
Named in under-20s squad. So, yeah, good prospect.
Does this mean the end of Daryl Morfo?
I don't think we can ever write off Daryl Morfo.
Yeah, because that's... I think you'll get you in trouble writing off Daryl.
That is true.
He'll disappear for like 5 years, and then he'll come back, sort of start for Scotland in like the next World Cup.
As a starting lion.
Yeah, exactly. down the M8, two bits of business for Glasgow. A two-year contract for unbeaten Brandon, staying in Glasgow for a couple of years. He's done very well when he's played for Glasgow, hasn't he?
Yeah, and I mean, essentially as a third choice 10, because I imagine Hastings and Horn top two, pretty strong, you know, player to have.
Mm, yeah.
I've actually been relatively impressed with him. Like, he's clearly like a good ball player.
He scored like 24 points in that victory against the Scarlets when Glasgow went down to 14.
Yeah, no, I think he's been good, and he's probably kind of signing that it was a bit underwhelming at the time, but yeah, actually kind of a really capable pair of hands, and I'm sure he's been told that, you know, there might be a chance for Scotland in the future, but at the moment you're going to be playing these games when the internationals are away.
I guess we'd never want to see him like starting against like Leinster or Saracens, but more than happy for him to be playing 10 against many of sort of like the lower sides.
He's a bit of a Rui Jackson type, don't you think? Like, yeah. And he can play fullback as well.
So yeah.
Like, okay, yeah, we'll take that against Cardiff and a fallow
yes
international weekend, but you know, absolutely. That cut above. But who knows? I think he's still pretty young.
And still yet to be beaten when he started for Glasgow this season.
Well, you
so
say that. I don't know if that's definitely true.
Could be true. I've said it enough. There's always a chance that it's true. The other bit of business down there, bit of a club talk, Adam Ash has signed on for another couple of years. I know we've been impressed with his form this year, particularly in the first half of the season. But another good man to tie down for Glasgow for the next couple of years.
Yeah, for sure. I think he's definitely sort of been pushing for a Scotland place this year. I suppose maybe the one issue is he's sort of stuck between being a six or an eight, and that's not really done him very many favours in the international arena. But yeah, been really good for Glasgow this year, and just a good squad player to have around for sure.
Anything to add, Alan?
No, look, he comes across as a really, really nice guy, and I think he's clearly like a big personality in that squad, and he just needs to get a good run of games. He's just, those injuries, I think, have really hampered him. I think,
yeah,
you know, he first came on the scene when he was like 20 and, you know, wasn't looking out of place in an international setup.
Mm.
So, you know, really hope that, you know, as I said, he can A, find his position in that team.
Yeah.
And B, sort of just get that run of games that I think will get him the form that will mean they'll be pushing on getting into that Scotland squad.
Absolutely. Matt, why don't you take us down Clubland? Quarterfinals of the Scottish Cup this weekend. Why don't you run us through those?
Yeah, so Melrose got back to winning ways. They beat Watsonians 25-8 at the Green Yards. Jed Forrest against Heriots. Jed were the only non-Prem team involved, and they put up a pretty good fight in the second half, and I think actually won the second half, but left it too late, went down 52-26 to Heriots. Donald Grieve, the number 8, was playing his 300th match for Jed Forrest, so fair play to him, some achievement. Hoyk got the win at home against Stirling County, and Ayr continue on their impressive season, beating the Chieftains 34-19 at home. So the fixtures coming up will be Melrose against Ayr in the first semi and Heriots against Hoyk.
Couple of bangers there.
Yeah.
Nice. Hoyk holding the flag for the non-Super 6 clubs.
Yeah, exactly.
Good for them. Nice to see them at Murrayfield.
Mm. And the other sort of follow-on news from that is a bit of a few rumours surrounding the Super 6 coaching setup, which seem to be set in stone, but there's a bit of a merry-go-round at the moment. So Ben Cairns is going to replace John DL as a Scotland Sevens coach.
Cairns currently Curry coach, yeah?
No, he's going to Stirling to be their Super 6 coach.
Right.
So he'll no longer be coaching Stirling County in the Super 6. As John DL be going to Glasgow as their forwards coach. So the knock-on effect of that is James McLaren, who I think used to play centre for Scotland.
Yes, he did.
I haven't heard his name in a long time.
So he has played for Scotland Rugby League and Rugby Union.
So. Oh, has he?
And also was...
Oh, save it for the quiz, Alan.
I know.
Whoa-ee.
And was also Rupeni Thautau's opposite man in that Scotland-Fiji group game.
Oh my
in
God.
In the 03 World Cup, when Thautau literally rinsed the shit out.
I thought it was Kenny Logan.
Kenny Logan then moved to, I think, fullback. I think Metcalf might be.
Oh, yeah,
that.
Yeah. Anyway.
He's only got one appearance for Scotland.
What? Really?
Oh, no. Sorry. No, that's his rugby. Wrong. That's his rugby league. Apologies. He's got 30 appearances for Scotland.
Yeah, I thought so. So he's... I don't know where he's been. I haven't heard his name mentioned once, but he's becoming Stirling County coach.
He's originally from Stirling as well.
Okay. Roddy Grant, as we know, is going to Ulster. Steve Laurie's going to go up to Edinburgh Rugby, and Nicky Walker is going to take his place as the head coach of the Watsonians Super 6 franchise.
Okay.
I can't remember now. Was he the one who went a bit rogue? Did Nicky Walker not go rogue in the Scotland Under 20 camp?
There was the Wales away game. I don't know if it was Nicky Walker, but a lot of the Scotland Under 20s lads went...
It was the coaches, though. It wasn't the players.
Oh, yeah.
They got in a fight in a pub or something.
Let's come back to that
next
week.
So
I've just looked up James McLaren, and the personal section of his Wikipedia is unbelievable. It just says, he used the name Jim when playing rugby league and James when playing rugby union. So there you go. That, if you need to know any more about
James
McLaren...
And that's why no one's heard of him, because he's managed to confuse people so well with his alter ego.
Exactly.
Mate, he's a chameleon.
What an amazing bit of detail.
Yeah, I know. Yeah, so let's keep an eye on what James McLaren's up to.
Yeah, we really will. Thank you very much for that, Matt. Any other news from Clubland, or should we move on to the international game?
I think that's about it.
Right, well, Scotland back after a 10-day break in the Six Nations France this weekend. We are counting the bodies, adding them to the injury pile during the Six Nations. Hugh Jones, Ryan Wilson, and Stuart Hogg all ruled out through separate injuries. Jones in particular out, and Wilson, I believe, out for the rest of the Six Nations. It looks like Hoggy, there may be a chance that you'll be back for England, but that is very much up in the air. Finn Russell out for the France game, picked up a head knock playing for Racing against Toulouse at the weekend. All of that means that 6 new players were added to the Scotland squad this week by Gregor Townsend. George Turner returning from injury, the pudding, Duncan Weir coming up from Worcester, Magnus Bradbury from Edinburgh, Dougie Fife from Edinburgh, Xander Ferguson again returning from injury, and hot in form, wee Jimmy Johnson from Edinburgh. Lads, Scotland, France, give me your top lines. How are you feeling about it?
Confused, if I'm honest.
Okay, that'll do.
I honestly don't know what to expect in the slightest. I think, Paul Edison will say later, you've kind of on one side got French rugby, which seems in this complete state of disarray. But then on the other side, you've got Scotland, who haven't won in France for 20 years, which I think is actually a really, potentially is quite a meaningful statistic. And then the fact that missing maybe, you know, five of our top seven players.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which for a team which we've constantly potentially lacks depth is a pretty punchy number.
It is, and it looked like it was maybe going to be down another one as rumours were abound that Josh Strauss had lost his passport, but it seems that the British government have stepped in to get Josh Strauss a passport, or he's found his spare South African passport. But I suppose as Scotland, we can gloss over that fact.
Well, I mean, the Secretary of State for Scotland, David Mundell, no less, supposedly stepped in.
Did he?
And we've got... Got our good friend Aristotle from ScottishRugbyPhilosopher.blogspot.com, which I'd definitely check out, who had this to say about the diplomatic incident. This is a rare incident of the lovely and untalented Fluffy, which I think is David Mundell. Maybe a reference to his beard or his hair, I'm not quite sure. Doing something useful for Scotland. And it might earn him a few more votes in Langham come the next general election, all assuming we are not independent before then. But how like a Tory. There he is, going against the wishes of his constituents and the majority of the voters in Scotland and trying to drag Scotland out of Europe, but able to take time out to ensure a South African citizen gets into the continent. You couldn't make it up. That is the best take on that event.
I mean, that is one of the hottest takes of the year.
That is excellent. That is excellent. But he's supposed that he's fine now. Strauss will play.
I do like the idea of like Dave Montales and like the Houses of Parliament. Just like call comes through from Gregor Townsend. He's like, no worry, I'll speak to Jeremy. I'll get this sorted with the Foreign Office.
I reckon he's just happy to get a call. Happy to be doing something. Yeah, you know?
I mean, the Conservative representative for Scotland is probably one of the most hated positions
in
politics.
Let's move away from politics.
Let's leave politics.
I agree with Alan that. You know, I look at the Scotland team and then I look at the French team, and one minute I think, yeah, Scotland will get this. And then the next I think that French team actually, you know, they're dangerous. They picked, like, at least think at club level, some foreign players like Dupont and Ntamack and Ramos and Fiku, for example. And their pack's always going to be pretty solid. It's just sort of joining up the two. But I worry slightly that France are just going to really go for it and be unpredictable, and that'll be hard to deal with for a Scotland team that obviously have the most injuries of all time.
Absolutely. And we'll now go over to our interview with Paul, who gave us great insight into that French selection. And we started off by asking him, what the hell is going on with French rugby?
That's probably an entire podcast in itself. But yeah, it's been pretty chaotic between mutiny within the team, apparently no idea of what a back three needs to do, and then the club presidents deciding to weigh in as well, just in case we'd forgotten about the top 14.
And you mentioned the mutiny there. How much has that been a sort of creation of the media, or is that genuinely something that's gone on? And if so, who's won?
The coaches tried to claim this week that there was no issue with the players kind of speaking out after the France game. Morgan Parra kind of spoke saying that they didn't train hard enough, and Cami Lopez after the game pretty much said, yes, we're to blame, but we're not the only people to blame. So it was fairly clear that both of them were kind of questioning the preparation and the build-up, and by all accounts, kind of off the record, other players have said similar, that they hadn't kind of prepared well enough for the English kicking game. And so Parra and Lopez were the two who went on the record, and neither of them are in the 23. So I think the coaching staff have probably won that battle in some ways, and probably not even the coaching staff. I think that might be, by all accounts, a Bernard Laporte kind of order that's come down from on high, saying that those two can't be in the 23, even though Brunel insists it's purely on sporting merit.
Yeah, sure. And obviously France announced the team quite early this week. What did you make of that? Was there any sort of strategic rationale to that? Or does that just once again sort of sum up what's going on in French rugby at the moment?
So it's quite an interesting one. They've kind of created this little leadership group of players, kind of eight or nine of them who were kind of speaking to Jack Brunel each evening, kind of going back over what's happened in during the day and kind of taking any messages from the wider squad to him. And by all accounts, one of the things they wanted to do was to name the team earlier in the week. We've not really been told exactly why, presumably to kind of allow them to prepare in peace. I don't think it's really going to change what Scotland's plans are, knowing who's playing too much, although obviously it's a slight difference with Dupont starting compared to Morgan Parra, but you still don't really know what to expect when it's such a kind of a jumbled side. They could be like they were in the first half against Wales, they could be like they were in the second. Scotland are probably hoping that they were like they were in the first half against England, in which case it might be a first win in Paris for 20 years.
And who's in the leadership team then?
So it's interesting, it's quite a mixture. So you've got some of the people you'd expect, obviously Girardot, Picamole, Parra, interestingly, in the leadership team, but not in the match day 23. And then there's some younger guys, Felix Lombe, Roman Tomac, which is quite a leap for him at 19, Jefferson Poirot. So it's kind of a different group of players with quite a wide age range, but most of them with leadership potential you'd expect. Johan Ije is in there randomly, which caught me a bit by surprise. But it's quite a mixed group.
Yeah, for sure. And in terms of the team announcement for Saturday, what do people in France make of it? Is it a sort of wild panic or a bit of a calculated risk rewarding some foreign players?
I don't know if they know what to make of it, really. People have been clamouring for Antoine Dupont to start at nine, and I think that's fair enough. He's very different to pretty much any other nine they've got at the moment and have had in the recent past. He's not the kind of the marshal of the team, but he's just an incredible game breaker in terms of his just ability to kind of beat men. He can shake off. I mean, there are a few times in that England game when he came on when he thought he was about to get swallowed up, and then he just kind of somehow kind of wriggle out and get away. And he's just got that low centre of gravity, so he's a very big. Well, he's a big threat with ball in hand. So I think people are desperate to see him. There's a few people who've welcomed Ntamack starting at 10. I'm a little anxious about that. I think that may be where he ends up, but although he was a 10 coming through the ranks, he's switched to 12 during last year's Worlds under 20s and has played pretty much at 12 most of the season for Toulouse. He's played about 4 or 5 at 10, not to great success, and it feels like they're asking a lot of him to kind of take on that mantle. And then Thomas Ramos, I think people were quite keen to see him get a shot because he's been brilliant for Toulouse. And obviously, he adds the goal kicking as well, which probably would have been asking too much of Ntamack, who doesn't kick regularly.
For sure. And do you think the selection kind of indicates a specific game plan, you know, with having those halfbacks in there? Or is it just sort of a bit of a gamble and trying to put in some exciting young players to do something a bit different?
It's been tricky to see much of a game plan so far in the championship.
Yeah, I agree.
Brunel spent so long kind of talking about how Parra and Lopez were his kind of halfback pairing. That was the one he'd been waiting for all this time. He'd not been able to start to play either of them or to play them together in his entire first year in charge. And so he thought, okay, well, once he's got his halfbacks, then he can really start to do something. And then we're two games later and they've already been dumped. So the idea of kind of a coherent game plan is going to be quite tricky to work out what it's going to be. The three changes in the backs are all Toulouse players coming in, so you figure that they'll try and play similar to Toulouse, kind of the way they've been going this season, so counter-attacking, keeping the ball alive. And Tomek's a very good passer, so I imagine they'll try and get kind of Fiku and his pace involved, and then Bastro kind of bashing it up as he can, and maybe try and use him as a dummy when they can. So I imagine they'll try and play with some pace, but at this stage it's difficult to tell kind of exactly what they're going to do.
Yeah, so with all that in mind, what do you think Scotland need to do to sort of turn this French team over? What are the sort of weaknesses that you perceive in that French 15?
I mean, they're still going to be, they should be much better in terms of their coverage of the back three. Ramos is an out-and-out fullback. Ouvre has more of an idea of where he needs to be when he's a winger. I still think that there's going to be the potential to kind of push them there. Puneau has only moved to the wing this season, really. And Pickamall isn't kind of the number eight who kind of sweeps back in the same way that Aaron Ordicky would have done back in the day. So I think the kicking game, I mean, had Russell been available, obviously that would have been a real possibility for the Scots, depending on who they go with, Horn or Hastings or maybe even Duncan Weir. I imagine they'll still look to try and push in that regard. And then you figure, I mean, Scotland always seem to have some joy at the breakdown against the French. I imagine they'll probably try and do that again, even if there are quite a few back row injuries. What would you expect the Scottish back row to be?
Probably asking all of us on the spot now. I think it'll be Strauss,
now that he's got his passport.
Yeah, now Strauss has got his passport, he's allowed to travel. Strauss, Ritchie and maybe Bradbury.
Yeah, okay, that makes sense. Well, Ritchie's been really good, hasn't he? And then Bradbury's obviously kind of been there or thereabouts before kind of the dip over the last year. So I think they've probably fancied themselves to cause France some problems. The French will have to try and push them up front, but they've not actually been that dominant kind of at scrum time in either game, and that pack's not as big as it used to be, or as it was in that very first game. So that'd be an interesting one. The matchup up front should be quite an interesting one, I think.
I think, especially for those Scottish players, until this season, a lot of them hadn't really won in France. But with Glasgow winning away in Lyon and then obviously Edinburgh winning away in Toulon, it probably helps just from sort of a mental standpoint, knowing that they've sort of faced these players and beaten them kind of on their turf. So yeah. I think that should help them quite a lot going into that match. But I think I am worried, and I was really glad obviously that Strauss has managed to make it out of the country, but just from a size perspective and experience perspective, I think that Scotland team might has always struggled against that French pack.
Yes, yeah, that's certainly been the case at times in the past when you felt that the Scottish team probably had enough to go and win, but just couldn't quite get the upper hand up front and then kind of paid the price. I think as well, although it was in Scotland, that Edinburgh win against Montpellier in kind of a must-win game at the end of the European pool stages will probably help as well. Because I think as good as Edinburgh had been, you maybe thought, well, Montpellier in a big game with all their big guns might go and just get the job done. And actually, it was fairly comfortable for Edinburgh. Granted, not that many of the French players in there, but I think that as well, kind of psychologically, they shouldn't have any sort of barrier there with all these guys having been involved in wins over French teams this season.
Absolutely. I guess looking more broadly at the top 14 season, I guess we've now got Russell, Laidlaw, and obviously Richie Gray just coming back. Are you able to sort of give a summary of kind of how those guys have been doing this season? I guess we don't really get as much of a chance to kind of watch them play.
Yep. Well, it's good to have Richie Gray back. Kind of been waiting, but he seems to be kind of slowly working his way back. I think he was even in the Mid Olympics Team of the Week this week for his performance against Racing. So that gives Toulouse some more options. And I don't know whether Scotland will turn to him before the end of the Six Nations or not, but he'll have. They're playing this weekend. I think they're playing next weekend. So he could have three or four games under his belt with maybe a full 80 minutes. So he'll be getting close to what you need to kind of to be in contention. Russell has been very, very good for Racing. He's had a couple of off games. He was awful in Europe against Ulster away. And I think he's had one in the league as well where he's kind of a bit all over the place. But generally, he's been very, very good. I think that artificial surface kind of suits him at the U Arena and Racing with Pat Lambie, now retired, are pretty reliant on him, but they've loved him so far. And Laidlaw's, I think, really stepped up in his second year as well. He's still number two behind Parra in terms of Clermont, just because Parra's done so much for that club and is kind of a real leader. But I think in Laidlaw they found a fairly like-for-like alternative. Probably a slightly more reliable goal kicker, but someone who can kind of control the game and play with tempo if needed, even if it's not in his natural game, and it seems to be kind of working for him. So yeah, all three I think have been pretty impressive. Not that many European recruits come in and do well, but the Scots I think have been a success on the whole.
I think Russell specifically, we were a bit concerned that he would sort of struggle, especially in that sort of first 6 month period. Mm. I think the main concern now is he's obviously spending all his time behind what might be the best pack in club rugby. So sort of coming back to Scotland, where he doesn't get that sort of front foot ball as much, is can sometimes be a bit of a struggle in terms of the transition.
Yes, that's certainly the case. That he's going to have it will be a little bit of a contrast. Although I don't know, I'm kind of torn with him because he can do so much that in some ways, if you're going to have someone on behind kind of a struggling pack, it feels like he's maybe the sort of guy who can create something out of nothing and can make up for that. But then he also takes chances that if you've got a pack going backwards, maybe can be costly. So it's interesting at Racing, the two Laurents who are coaching are they're very pragmatic generally, and they've pretty much accepted that, well, with Finn, it's Finn, and they know that they know that you accept the wild passes within his own in-goal area, because you know that you can also create try out nothing and can kind of get that back line whirring. So for even people as dogged and kind of rigid as they are, I think they know what he brings and they're willing to accept it. So I think he's going to thrive there in the longer term, having already kind of made a pretty good impression in the first 6 months.
I think it's a similar journey that Scotland fans have gone on with him. Hopefully we're at a positive point in that. So maybe just to finish off, Paul, what is your prediction for the weekend?
I've been swinging back and forth. I mean, you could convince me it could be 15 to 20 points either way, just with the disarray on one side and the injuries on the other. I think I'd probably tip the Scots to just nick it. I think they'll have enough confidence that they might just... if they can open up a little lead early on, then the French might kind of find that a bit of a struggle. So I'd say probably 3 to 5 points for the Scots to get that win.
I think we'd all take that. So hopefully that comes true. Great. Well, thanks so much for your time. That was really, really interesting insight to French rugby and how Scots are doing in the top 14 at the moment. So, yeah, thanks a lot.
So, lads, you're sitting in Gregor Townsend's chair. You've got a couple of big positional changes to make due to injuries. Let's start with that number 10 jersey. Matt, I'm going to come to you. Who are you going to start instead of Finn Russell?
Yeah, it's a tough one. We understand that Duncan Weir has been sent back to Worcester, so he's not in the equation any longer. So it looks like a straight shootout between Horn and Hastings. I would like a bit of experience in there, and particularly given that Hastings has had a pretty bad, not a bad season, but a bad recent few months.
Yeah, he's been patchy.
If he'd been playing well, then I would have had no issues putting him in there. And that means, I think, if you play Horn there, then you don't have that much experience and you've got center injuries, so you might.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
So go for as much continuity as possible, which means you play a Glasgow backline of as much as you can of Horn, Johnson and Grigg, which is what I think Townsend might go for in the end.
Go for Squigsy.
Do you think it makes an impact that Horn started ahead of Hastings for Glasgow at the weekend?
Well, that's why I was thinking that maybe Townsend had a word and said we'd like to have him
sent him back to get some game time.
I think Dave Rennie was told.
Well, I don't know. You're always going to have a bit of that with the Scottish rugby, aren't you? But whether Dave Rennie's the kind of guy that will... I don't know.
I don't think he is.
Well, it was a man.
I don't think he is, but then I don't think he's going to have a major issue with Horn playing at 10.
It was a man of the match performance from Pete Horn at the weekend as well.
Exactly. Yeah. So I think you've got the mix of experience, and Pete Horn is on pretty good form at the moment.
Nick Grigg had a very good game at the weekend.
Yeah, exactly. And I just... you know, there's question marks over Nick Grigg, but I think if he's got familiar players around him, and have Seymour outside him, for instance, as well,
yeah,
then he can do quite a lot of damage. And I just don't think he might go with Harris, but I just don't quite think Harris has done that much in the Scotland shirt.
Do you not think it might be more likely that he would go with Hastings at 10, Horn at 12 as that sort of controlling influence, second distributor, and maybe switch, push Sam Johnson out into the 13 channel? Again, that Horn-Johnson midfield partnership is something that Glasgow have done on a number of occasions.
I mean, I just think primarily they will look at that 10 channel, and I just don't think Hastings... I can't really remember Hastings having a good game in the last sort of two months. Quite a substantial period. He had such a strong sort of October, November.
Yeah, good start.
Yeah.
But almost since those sort of Edinburgh games, he's actually really struggled to kind of get his form back. And I think the fact that Sam Johnson's had two relatively strong games at 12, and that really does feel like that's where he's most comfortable.
Absolutely, yeah. Mm.
It just seems when you know that him and Grigg have got a relatively strong partnership, and I think it's probably... one of the most used partnerships at Glasgow over the last sort of year and a half.
Definitely. Yeah.
It just feels like with all the sort of carnage that's going around, with Hogg out, with most of the back row out, especially now with Ryan Wilson out as well, that just having that stability is really important.
Yeah.
But what if you wanted to chuck stability out the window and pick a centre partnership that have beaten French opposition a couple times this year?
That is true. I mean,
Dean and James Johnson.
I think the question mark is probably going to be more Grigg Johnston rather than Grigg Harris. I feel like Harris just kind of gets in for versatility. I know that's maybe a bit harsh, but
no, I
don't think that's harsh at all.
There's been a lot of calls for Johnston.
He has been playing very, very well. I know it was only the Dragons,
but then you're
going to
be chucking in quite a few guys someone on his debut when you've already got people like Hogg and Russell out who provide the experience, which would just be mad.
It's like debut. At the start, away in France, with an inside centre who's only had two caps and you've never played with.
Yeah, but he was the one that marked Bastereau. He's the one that marked Bastereau twice now, and sort of
that is
taken
true.
Him out of the game.
And so that means it's time for Johnston to go, and the sweet prince to arrive.
This is it.
The Dauphin in France.
you can only go. You've got to put them in together.
Yeah, they can.
Yeah, they come as a package.
Yes,
you've got to play Dean and Johnston. Their performances this year, best in Europe, probably.
Quite, they're up. They're
We've
up
said
there.
It, all right.
I mean, it's happened.
Yeah.
So we already talked about it with Paul earlier. I suppose the other big discussion point is the back row. Matt, you've already nailed your colours to the mast with Bradbury at 6, Richie at 7, and Strauss at 8. Alan, do you agree with that?
Do you think Bradbury goes straight in? I know he had a really good game.
I was probably more talking about what I would like my back row to be. But, you know, when I think about it, yeah, he maybe won't go in for that reason. But then who else are you putting in? Gary Graham.
And Hardy. Or is Hardy out injured?
I think Hardy's injured.
Yeah, I think he is as well. So, yeah, Graham. Or what about Fraser Brown?
Oh, stop it. How exciting.
Once again, I would be for it. But what, he's...
What, Fraser Brown at 6?
Yeah.
George Turner on the bench.
Yeah.
I love it.
Unbelievable.
I absolutely love it.
No,
But then, how many games has Fraser Brown played since he's been back? Any?
Ooh, yeah, he didn't play the Glasgow game, did he?
Yeah. So if Bradbury's not getting in because he's not match fit, then it's quite a big ask.
Fraser Brown was on the bench for Ireland.
Yes, he was, but...
Oh,
so,
yeah.
I mean, he's obviously fit
he's
enough for
fit.
Scotland. Then.
Yeah, good point.
Yeah.
Interesting.
I do think... They'll go with Bradbury just because he clearly sort of came back,
I think he played 80 minutes.
Played most of the game and got man of the match, did he?
And he is exactly, with him and Strauss, it just helps so much in that battle against that French back row.
Yeah, definitely.
He looked... in fantastic nick for somebody coming back from injury the weekend for Edinburgh. He just looked like an absolute beast.
Yeah, I would like to see him there. It just depends if they want to chuck him in the mix. Fraser Brown's a pipe dream, but it's a hell of a pipe dream.
I know.
What a dream it is.
You know, looking at George Turner on the week at the weekend, he's probably someone you want on that bench.
That's what I think.
George Turner probably makes more impact off a bench than Fraser Brown, but you would start Fraser Brown ahead of a George Turner because you can put in much more of a Rambo-type performance for 80 minutes.
He's a better overall player.
Yeah.
It's annoying. You want Fraser Brown in that, on the pitch for open play.
Yeah.
It's just getting him into the set piece and sort of
where's
the right place, if any, to put him.
Is also, has he played any full games at Flanker in recent history?
Argentina
in the summer.
When we absolutely killed them.
They were so bad though.
That is true.
That game was a bit of a joke.
So I just wonder if it's once again like quite a big ask. Someone who's probably not fully match fit to play your first ever like Six Nations game as a flanker. I don't think he'd let you down, but...
Oh, I don't think he would.
I'm trying to get in the mind of Gregor Townsend, as you say, maybe. But he's a risk taker, so...
Yeah, it makes sense to me that Bradbury drops in there. What about the second row? I think probably Gilchrist and Gray, there's not an awful lot you can do in terms of dropping either of them.
No, not at all. It's interesting, obviously, that Richie Gray's playing well and getting into sort of team of the week there.
Yeah, that was great to hear.
Yeah, this exact sort of knowledge that we just do not have when it comes to French rugby.
All three of us were sitting there like, no way. That's amazing. It will be interesting to see, as Paul said, that there's this game and then another week's break before the Wales match.
Yep.
So if Richie gets another two games under his belt, I wouldn't be astonished if he comes out into that Scotland setup.
I'd love a bit of peak Richie.
Richie.
That'd be really nice to see him back.
It's like Ireland 2012.
Ireland 2013. I know he's ever getting that back.
So yeah.
It'd be so good to see him in a team, like in a Scotland team that is now so much markedly better than the teams that he was a standout player within.
Yeah.
It would be absolutely brilliant. And then I suppose in the front row, the only discussion point is the return of Xander Fagerson. I think he played 55 minutes for Glasgow at the weekend. Bergen, it would be Bergen versus Fagerson as a toss-up, or would you even have him in the squad, Matt?
Once again, I think it's quite a big ask, seeing as he's not been playing at all. But then the fact they put Fraser Brown in there and the fact that it is Darcy Ray who's the cover on the bench, someone's pretty green. I wouldn't be that upset about it. And once again, it would just be nice to have someone like Fagerson in the setup.
Absolutely. Should we save predictions until the end?
Yeah.
Sounds good.
Okay. Well, why don't we go on to a wee quiz then, Alan?
Just a wee quiz. Okay. So
far away.
I've been spending a lot of time on trains this week, so spent some time pulling together a quiz around sort of most cats for Scotland. And so what I want is for props, hooker, second row, back row, scrum half, standoff, centres, wing and fullback, like the most capped Scotland players in those positions. So, for example, Finn Russell has 41 caps at fly half. He has one cap starting at centre. Does that make sense? Or for someone like Max Evans, whilst he has like 50 caps, he only has 20 on the wing and sort of 30 on centre. So that would be his ranking for each of those sort of groupings.
Okay.
Does that make sense?
Okay.
So for like props and hookers, scrum half doesn't really matter.
But like wing, fullback.
Wing, fullback, centres... It starts to make a bit of a difference when players who have maybe split their sort of Scotland careers across like a multitude of positions.
Is it prop encompassing tight and loose head?
So props is just...
So we only need one name for props.
So we want two, but I don't care about tight head and loose head. Same with second rows, obviously. Back rows, just back row in general.
Okay.
So there you go.
I'm going to have a really bad time.
So let's start.
This is tough.
So in the history of Scottish rugby, stop looking at the answer, Steve.
I can probably see yours, by the way.
Who are the two? What two props have had the most caps?
I'm going to go Alan Jacobson as one of them.
And
I had Jacobson and...
Your second one?
Tom Smith?
Who are you going for, Matt?
I don't think Tom Smith had that many. I can't think right now. Who is it?
So, Alan Jacobson is correct.
Go on, the chat.
He was the second most cap prop.
Okay.
And our most cap prop was Ewan Murray.
Ah, Ewan Murray.
So he's got 66, Alan Jacobson's got 65, and Tom Smith has 61.
So almost there.
This is the easiest one of the group. Hooker, who have you got?
Your man, Ross Ford.
Ross Ford is correct. Above the ton, with Gordon Bullock coming in at 75.
Of course.
Second row, there is one out ahead, and then there is two joint.
Two joint.
So who have the same amount of caps starting at second row. So who do you think those three would be?
I'm going to go Al Kellogg.
No. So that's one of you is gone.
Oh.
Dave, come up with a couple.
Scott Murray.
Scott Murray is top.
Boom.
Oh, I also had Scott Murray.
Okay.
I had Scott Murray, Al Kellogg, and Jim Hamilton.
You know, Jim Hamilton's not bad. He's got like 61, but he's not in the top three. Who's your other one? You got one more, Matt.
I'm going to go Grimesy.
Grimes is correct.
Yes, nice.
So Stuart Grimes has 71 caps at lock. Nathan Hines.
I was going to say Nathan Hines.
Nathan Hines has 77 caps.
Does he?
But six at flanker. Six at flanker. 71 at lock. So him and Grimes have got the same. So back row, we've got four because there's another tie. Who are your four back rows? Right, you got four?
No, but I'll make some up as I go along.
Right, should we alternate? Dave, do you want to go first?
Ali Hogg.
Ali Hogg is not correct.
I'd Hogg as well.
He got loads for a long for time, his and age, his career and was got, sort of like yeah. cut a wee bit short,
yeah.
wasn't
yeah.
it?
Yeah.
I thought he'd done enough to rack them up.
John Barkley.
John Barkley is correct. John Barkley with 71 caps.
71 okay. caps, John Barkley. I've got that.
Who's your other one, Dave?
It's not right. Kelly Brown?
Kelly Brown is correct.
He's
one of the tied thirds. So he's on 64 caps.
64 caps, Kelly?
Yes. So you got two more. John Barkley's number one for back row caps. You got person who's second and the person who's tied with Kelly Brown.
And one of these people...
Jason White.
Jason White, is correct. 77 caps. And my calculations say that he's had 64. So the same as Kelly Brown in the back row.
Yeah.
So he's had about 13 starting at lock.
Wowee.
And then you got one more, if anyone's got it.
It could be really rogue, but I'm going to go Strokosh.
That is rogue.
It's deeply rogue.
That was been around for so long.
That was deeply rogue.
Yeah, it has been rogue.
No, I don't think he's actually that rogue. I'm not sure where he's at. He must be in like the 40s or something. This guy was like, there was like a couple of years where he was like real, like world class standard, like Lions chat. I think didn't he go on one of the tours?
Simon Taylor.
Boom.
Davos. He was injured though. I just didn't have him in.
He was on 01 and 05.
Yeah, 66 caps.
He got 66 caps.
Really?
Yeah.
Wow, he was brilliant. You're not wrong to say he was
Were all his caps in the back row? Because he ended up playing second row for Bath.
Yes. Interestingly, ESPN stats tell me that they were all in the back row. Whether they're correct or not.
We'll absolutely take that.
Right, scrum half. What you got?
Mike Blair.
I had Mike Blair as well.
Mike Blair is correct. Coming in at 84
nice.
With one cap on the wing.
Picked up a cap on the wing, did he?
Well,
against
2010 Wales, came off the bench.
Oh, was it Wales?
Because Max Evans came on for Chris Patterson.
He also played on the wing against like Japan, but I think it was a injury.
Yeah, so he came off the bench for Tom Evans when he obviously went off with his injury. He came on the wing. Who have you got at 10? This is an interesting one.
I'm going to go with Finn.
Old Finn. Davos?
I went with Finn as well.
Went with Finn. So Finn, it's not. I don't actually know how many Finns. Finn on around 40-something?
Yeah, he's around about that.
So no, there is at least two people ahead of him.
Parks?
Three people ahead of him.
All right.
Parks is correct. 62 caps. with two at fullback, two on the wing, and one at centre.
two on the wing?
I think, again, coming off the bench.
Oh, okay.
And then Craig Chalmers on 59.
Oh, yes.
I forgot about him.
And then Gregor Townsend's had 58.
nowhere near that.
Good.
So, yeah, Dan Parks had the most. And then in the centres, who have you got? This is a little bit more old school, actually. It just shows you the dearth of talent we've had at centre for the last, like, 20 years.
I have zero names written down at the moment. So I'm feeling good about that.
There's one that you'll be absolutely gutted about.
I've got Andy Henderson.
Goofy.
Yeah.
Andy Henderson is third.
Third.
With 51 caps at centre.
What about... Nice. No way. Graham Morrison?
Graham Morrison is not in.
I didn't think so. I mean, I'm just thinking about dearth of talent at the centre for Scotland.
There's a man... come on.
Alan Tate?
No, not Alan Tate.
De Luca?
Not De Luca. So I'm just going to tell you.
Marcus DeRolo?
No, De Rolo. Older.
Give us one more clue.
Older than those two.
Scott Hastings.
Boom. Scott Hastings is number one with 64 caps starting at centre. And then the last one is Veald, a Lion.
What club were they from?
For some reason, I think Hoik.
Rennick.
Yes. From Rennick. Yeah. 52 caps for Scotland, and then one Lions cap in like the 80s.
Very nice.
Love that.
So, wing. Two wingers. Who have you got?
I've got Sean Lamont.
Boom. Correct.
I had Sean Lamont as well.
Of course you did, Dick.
Nobody can prove that I haven't.
And who's your other wing?
Mainly, I don't think it's right, but he's in my head. Kenny Logan.
Who's your other wing?
Simon Webster.
Kenny Logan is correct.
Yes.
I'm going to say it's even coming up to the fullback. So who is our most capped fullback? As in either started or came on at fullback?
Patterson.
Surely Chris Patterson.
Are you both saying Chris Patterson?
Yeah.
I know it's not great for the people who are living out there in suspense after this hour-long quiz. Stuart Hogg, just for fun.
Stuart Hogg is correct.
Yeah.
Oh, Chris Hampton. Patterson's been between wing and fullback.
Wing and fullback.
Out of Chris Patterson's 109 caps, he's had 44 at fullback, 50 on the wing, one at centre, and 14 at standoff.
He had 14 caps at standoff.
Yeah. He ends up being the most capped back, but not the most capped in any position.
That's very interesting. I like the way your mind works sometimes. It's quite weird.
Have had a lot of time this week, haven't you?
Just a lot of trains, mate.
Yeah.
You know what?
What's going to be good is when we edit that up, it's going to be like as if we were coming up with these so
bang,
fast.
Bang, bang, bang.
Not like we've been sitting here for 25 minutes thinking about it.
Yeah.
Thanks very much for that, Alan. Well, why don't we go ahead? Let's talk very quickly about Glasgow and Edinburgh, the weekend that was and what is coming up for them, and then finish off with some predictions, and then everyone can get on their merry way. Let's start Friday night, Edinburgh against the Dragons, 34-17. That man, Jimmy Johnson, two tries. Man of the match performance from Bradbury and Doohan van der Merwe dotting down with a couple as well. Pretty decent showing from Edinburgh. Lads, happy with that?
I mean, yeah, to get the bonus point result is great. I mean, it was a lot closer for quite a lot of the match, and the Dragons were actually leading at halftime. And it's not exactly a vintage Dragons team.
Yeah.
So I think Edinburgh will have been a bit disappointed, but yeah, a few guys returning from injury, likes of, as you said, Jimmy Johnson playing well, Doohan getting on the score sheet. It's a solid 80 minutes work.
It's actually a bit of a, you know, it's not must win, but they equal with Treviso, Ulster two behind, and then Scarlets five behind, and all three of those teams have got relatively easy games. Scarlets have got the Cheetahs, and then I think Treviso have got Dragons at home.
Yeah,
and then I think Ulster have got Zebra. So
I think the big one in Edinburgh's mind is not this weekend; it's the following weekend against Benetton.
Yeah.
Is that home or away?
Away. They're down in Benetton on Saturday, 2nd of March.
Yeah.
So that hopefully they can go, they can win against Cardiff this weekend. But then Benetton surely is the big game that they're looking forward to, because then that could pretty much hopefully cement them into that second spot. They then do go and play Leinster, but Leinster are so far ahead that it probably doesn't matter that much.
It's a weird thing though that, you know, Edinburgh could very easily come second and get a home, well, it was a World League quarter final, and at the same time miss out on Europe. Genuinely,
how would that work?
Well, if they ended up coming fifth in their group,
so the results could go the wrong way.
If the results go the wrong way,
I see what you mean. Yeah,
and whereas, you know, with the way Glasgow's pool is, you know, they're just, it's going to take a lot for them to really get caught up.
Yeah.
But for Edinburgh at the moment, until, you know, either Treviso sort of stop being quite so good,
yeah,
like it's because I always kind of felt in that group that, with, you know, Leinster, Edinburgh, Ulster and Scarlets, you're kind of guaranteed that top four, and kind of Treviso coming in now, just making it that bit more dangerous.
So Edinburgh welcome Cardiff to Murrayfield. One for the absolute ultras on Saturday. What a day of rugby. Scotland, France, England, Wales, and then you can roll straight into Edinburgh Cardiff Blues as your dessert at 7:35 at Murrayfield. We saw Cardiff at the weekend against Glasgow. What do you guys think? Edinburgh going to be able to do a job on them there?
I think they should be able to. I think kind of Glasgow style suits Cardiff, who are also quite loose.
Yeah,
whereas Edinburgh, if they tighten things up, don't let, because Cardiff definitely got some pretty dangerous backs, don't let them into the game and sort of strangle them up front, then I think Edinburgh should have too much, and I think they really need to aim for a bonus point win there, actually.
Particularly at home, they've been very, very good at Murrayfield all season. You mentioned Cardiff chucking it around with some dangerous backs. We saw all of the bag to tricks for Cardiff and Glasgow at the weekend. Glasgow eventual winners, 38-34. Greg Price, Pete Horn, Nick Frisby, and that man, David Tamalau, getting on the score sheet for Glasgow. I mean, it's a great win. It's a bonus point win on the road for Glasgow, but they did throw away, I think it was around about 15-point, maybe 20-point lead at one stage.
Yeah.
Is that something that would worry Glasgow fans? Are they happy to get 5 points on the road?
Yeah, as you said, I think both teams play into each other's. They've both got, not lightweight packs, but quite dynamic ball playing.
Yeah, it's not their
strength. So I think it was always going to be, especially on that artificial pitch, a relatively sort of open game, and it's also like the fourth time they've played each other this year.
Yeah, I know.
So they like know each other so well. I don't think you're going to be that worried. I think with a sort of relatively second string pack, it's
thought. Kyle Steyn looked pretty good on the debut. Had some good runs.
Set up one of the tries.
Yeah, I think. We haven't touched on this, but DTH is out for the rest of the season.
Yes. So
it's good. Just I'm not saying that, you know, Carl Stein's going to be starting matches, but it's quite good to have him as as an option coming in.
High quality option and more game time for young Stafford McDowell in the centre.
Thomas Gordon as well.
Thomas Gordon getting some good time. I was quite impressed with that, actually. I thought they looked very, very good, and then once they realised they had won, they were like, oh, cool, let's just chill out.
The best bit still was George Turner's run.
Oh my god!
Off Frisby. I mean, I don't really know what the defense is like. The prop literally
just stepped out of the way.
No, just a complete, you know, misfire. But
and then he ran straight over Matthew Morgan.
He is the most aggressive player in Scottish rugby.
I mean, we have a friend that has trained with George Turner and has been in a similar situation to that, but touch rugby.
Yeah.
And I think the exact same thing happened. Yeah.
The Maori sidestep, as the commentator described it.
Touch rugby, and George Turner decided to go as quickly as possible straight into him. And he said
to this young sort of wannabe surveyor.
Yeah.
I love that. Well, it's quite an interesting one coming up for Glasgow at the weekend. They've got Connor at Scotstoun on Friday night. And in the context of Poulet, Connacht are in third, Glasgow are in second, so you'd think if Glasgow can return a solid win, that probably pretty much cements them into second place in their conference as well.
I guess the concern is just whether any of those forwards who started for Glasgow at the weekend get called up. I guess when we were chatting about the back row earlier, we didn't really talk about Ash or Harley.
Yeah,
to be fair. And then also with George Turner and Xander Ferguson,
yeah,
potentially getting called up. Once you kind of, again, peel away, like David Tamalu, Kevin Bryce.
Right, David Tamalu scoring tries to fun against Cardiff.
That was like his first touch as well.
Everyone was absolutely... He must be quite popular. Everyone was absolutely loving it when he scored.
Absolutely fucked by the time he got to the line.
Oh yeah.
He was towing so hard.
Fair play to get there though. I don't think anyone expected... You don't expect a hooker to make a clean break like that.
Yeah, like a 30-40 meter break.
And also George Turner is pretty rapid.
Yeah, he is.
But Matthew Morgan did the wee speed bump, slowed him down for everybody, but...
But that last 10 metres was, like, painful.
Tamalu. the lactic in Tamalu was unbelievable.
So much lactic.
But you've got to say, Friday Night Lights at Scotstoun against Connacht. Are you back in Glasgow for that one?
Yeah, 100%.
They should be aiming. They don't need the bonus point win, but I think that should be the aim.
Yeah.
Very positive. So that if we're getting bonus point wins for Glasgow and Edinburgh, let's finish off with some predictions.
I am just thinking,
Scotland, France.
The issue with Connacht is they're not hit by losing players, really.
No, not nearly as much as any of the other Irish provinces.
Apart from Bundiaki, essentially.
Their team's still not very good.
And though, that second row lad, whose name we didn't know in the Ireland preview.
Quinn Roo. Yeah, I did notice that when I was away. I think he's South African.
Kind of just didn't realise that Connacht were like third in the group, though.
Yeah, that's true.
But yes, I still think Glasgow got it.
Well, very, very good positive predictions for those two. Should we finish off with them? Some France predictions? Matt, come to you first. Give me a score prediction.
Well, I'm going to be at the match, so I'm really, really hoping for a win. I think Scotland will win by 7.
Love that. Alan?
So,
what's the best bet for this week?
Seeing as my prediction for both games have come true.
They both have come true.
I think France are going to win by 12.
France by 12? 12.
Don't do this to me, mate.
I generally think just those injuries for Scotland is just going to be such a dent. And I've got this sneaking suspicion that France just aren't as bad as everyone thinks they are. Like, that first half against Wales was pretty spectacular. It was actually pretty great rugby, especially in those conditions.
Yeah, it was.
And, yeah, fair play, they had a shocker against England, but they lost by less than we lost when we last went to Twickenham.
Mm. Yeah, let's not bring that. Why are you bringing
that? Bring all these facts and logic into the equation.
I don't know. I just think France...
I can kind of see... The thing is, remember the last time we played in Paris... and a few people got injured, and after that it was just that we should have won the game without the injuries.
But that is
probably going to happen.
Was that the last time kidney game?
Yeah, exactly. But this time we've got, you know, an even thinner
squad
to draw from, and you've got guys coming on who are green or not fit, having to play against a big French pack. It would be my worry.
Concern.
But then I think the Scotland team is... It's just, I think, mentally a bit different, and I think...
You know, I honestly...
Be quite confident of the win.
I honestly think, like, Russell and Watson be a massive difference.
To most teams, massively pivotable positions.
Yeah. Well, I can't...
What do you reckon, Dave?
I can't let it go on such a negative note. I've been walking around the office today saying that France are going to win by less than a score, but since we're on the pod, I'm going to say Scotland are going to win by less than 5. So there you go. Scotland, first Scotland win in 20 years.
There you go.
Would absolutely take that. And we will be back next week to tell you what happened. Get on Twitter. We'll be covering match day. That is Thistle Rugby Pod on Twitter. Thistle_Rugby_Pod on Instagram. And then drop us all of your thoughts and feelings and emotions after the game into that mailbag.
During the game.
TheThistleRugby@gmail.com. Get on iTunes, hit subscribe, and we will speak to you soon. Cheers, guys.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news! Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.